podcast is a service of Bridgeway Community Church in Rockford, Michigan. Thanks for listening. Here's today's message.
Hey, it's great to be here with you. It's great to see you here today. And today we are wrapping up our series, Throwback. And if you're new or visiting with us, we've been looking for the last 9 weeks at what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. We've been throwing it back to what discipleship really, really means. And this has been a fun series for me because we've centered ourselves in one book in the Bible, the Gospel of John. In fact, today in this last message, we're going to be in John chapter 14. If you have your Bibles or if you have your favorite Bible app, you can make your way to John chapter 14 even now. And as we kind of dive into this, hopefully along this journey in what it means to be a disciple, you've seen that what this author John is trying to do for us is he's trying to make it just abundantly clear, just blatantly obvious that Jesus is Lord. And so he gives you all these signs, these miracles that lead you down this path where you see one miracle after the other, and Jesus shows his hand that Jesus is Lord. And in this series, we've covered all the miracles in the book of John. They're all done. And what I want to talk about this morning is not just the grand big miracles that Jesus has done, but I want to talk today about the miracle that Jesus can do in you, in your life. And kind of the way the series has gone is once we finished all these miracles, I wanted to turn our attention towards an aspect that I really deeply care about, and that is your wholeness and your health as an individual. I'm very much keyed in on the topic of wellness, and many of you know I have some passions in the area of physical wellness and spiritual wellness, but I also want to talk about mental wellness, and in fact, just mental health in general. In fact, I want to talk about the subjects that matter most to the people that I love and care about. And so a couple of weeks ago, we talked about shame. How does a disciple deal with shame? And then last week, we looked at the very complex and important topic of depression. And this week, as Justin's already told you, I want to talk about anxiety because I see it impact and affect so many people in life. You know, as a pastor, I have lots of conversations with other pastors, and I find it so strange that my observation is in the church, a lot of pastors don't want to talk about mental health issues. I've heard from pastors, peers, friends of mine that, oh, no, that's taboo. That's not for us to deal with. And yet, my experience is that is exactly what many of us are dealing with on a daily basis. And so I want to dig into this topic of anxiety. In fact, I want to dedicate this message this morning to anyone who's ever felt anxious in life. Maybe they've felt anxiety to the point of just this crippling fear or a panic attack. If you study this subject long enough, what you find is that really smart people, psychologists and people who study human behavior, they find that the topic of anxiety is just as prevalent in the church as it is for people outside of the church. And what they're finding is this issue of anxiety is just escalating. It's growing more and more on a daily basis. We live in this world today, this information age, and while it's added a lot of benefits to our life, it's also added stress, it's added angst, it's added fear, it's added concern. And for someone who's already maybe a little predisposed to feeling nervous and anxious about the world around us, this day and age that we live in just seems to ramp everything up, takes it all to 11. And people start to ask themselves questions like, well, how do I fit in to this world as someone who's trying to make my way in this journey of knowing and following Jesus? How do I fit in? How do I belong? Does anyone see me in the world today? I want to just begin by saying we need to talk about this. Let's talk about this. It's growing and growing and growing. I firmly believe our world could use a lot less anxiety. Let's just begin with kind of some ground rules here in this space. And let me just remind you that this is a safe place. That as we talk about these subjects, you need to know that this is a shame-free environment. I take it very seriously that we have out on the road sign that everyone is welcome here. And so when it comes to the topic of anxiety, you may feel like you're on some sort of level of the spectrum of whether or not you are anxious ever, you probably know somebody who's had anxiety. Or maybe you've battled anxiety in the past, or maybe you're struggling with anxiety right now, and the last thing you want is for someone else to know about it. And no matter where you are, no matter how you've found your way in here this morning, I need you to know that this is a shame-free place, and the title of my message today is It's Okay to Not Be Okay. But I think that part of dealing with this is talking about it. In fact, I don't want this to be kind of a heavy felt message this morning, and I can already feel for some of you as I'm talking about anxiety, you're becoming more anxious. So do this for me just a moment. Turn to the person next to you and give them a big high five. Just turn to the person next to you and give them a big high five. Tell them you love them. All right. All right, now do this. Now turn to the person on the other side of you. That person is technically your second choice in this option. And give them a big high five. Maybe tell them, go Lions, you know, right? Like, trust me, Lions need all, this might be all the cheering they get today right here. This might be more of it. So we need to talk about this. I don't know if you've realized, but when it comes to the topic of anxiety, I've observed something. I think that anxiety is not very scalable, meaning that what some people struggle with, are anxious about, become nervous about, are completely different what someone else might feel is a valid struggle, concern, nervous behavior. I can just imagine in a room this size that there are some fears that others in this room would never, ever begin to understand. And so there needs to be some sort of like baseline of how we travel together and how we kind of journey through this topic together. I've been around the church all my life, and I know that in some ways there are some topics that you need to handle with a little more care, and I think this is one of them. In fact, as I say to you, and as I care so deeply about this being a safe place and a shame-free zone, and anyone and everyone is welcome, I also know that sometimes things can get said that aren't the most helpful when it comes to topics like anxiety or any issue of mental health. And I want to make sure that as a community, if someone were here to say, hey, you know, I'm kind of sensing that what Ron is wanting me to do is to become a little bit more transparent, and you were to say to someone, hey, I'm feeling anxious, I would want you all to be able to respond in a loving and caring way. Let me try to get you to think about this a little bit differently. I'm not normally a very anxious person. I tend to not struggle with anxiety, except there's one thing that can get me just a little bit anxious, a little bit worked up, and it only happens about once or twice a year, and it's whenever I toe the line at an Ironman triathlon. Some of you know that this is my hobby, my passion. I love to do really, really long distance triathlons. Triathlon is a three-part race where you start with the swim. This will be the swim that I will be in next Sunday morning out in Tempe, Arizona. And I'll be swimming and racing with 2,800 of my closest friends. And this picture can start to build a little bit of anxiety. In fact, this has been my desktop screensaver on my computer for the last bit here, because I'm trying to kind of come to grips with this reality that we'll all get into this water and the gun will go off and it will not resemble swimming at the very beginning. In fact, I think this leg of the race looks much more like underwater MMA combat. You know, you're getting kicked, you're getting elbowed, and you're just trying to get away from this crowd and get down the stream. It starts off with it's a 2.4-mile swim. After the swim, you get out of the water, and you jump on your bike, and you go for a 112-mile bike ride out in the deserts of Tempe, Arizona, and then you get off your bike, and your legs feel like jello. It doesn't matter how many times I do this, and then you run, walk, or crawl 26.2 miles, just this little thing called a marathon at the end of it, and for me, that's about a 12-hour experience, hopefully. Hopefully, I can keep it in that range. And it can induce a little bit of anxiety as I step into it. And it's always something I look forward to. But imagine this. I've done several of these now. And now the goal isn't just to finish an Ironman. I want to go faster. I want to be kind of at that top level in my age group and defy odds, right? Get older and get faster at the same time. And so if I just told you that, and I'm kind of revealing myself to you, I said, you know, I really want to go faster in this next Ironman. You know, you could say something to me, and it could be kind of, like, unhelpful. Like, I could say, I want to go faster. And you could respond back to me, well, then try a little harder, Pastor, right? Like, if you want to go faster, well, then you would say something like this, like, well, then don't stop, right? Like, go really fast. Train a little bit harder. I'm working really hard at this thing. Well, if you want to go faster, well, then just run faster. I mean, simple as that. And I think sometimes that's how we come to the topic of anxiety. That someone may say to you, you know, hey, I'm feeling a little anxious. I got this meeting with my boss next week, and I'm not so sure. He's been kind of strange, been kind of odd the way our conversations have gone, and I feel anxious about it. Well, and someone would respond, well, that's nothing to be anxious about. Well, you'll be fine, right? Or especially in circles like this, in Christian circles, we may say something like, oh, you've got a fear? You've got, well, what is it? Tell me what, well, that's nothing to be afraid of. Well, you've prayed about it, right? Well, you know what the Bible says about anxiety. Oh, that's nothing. Don't worry about it. Matter of fact, just get over it. And what we can do is we can actually induce more anxiety and more harm for that person than really what's intended in our care for them. Anxiety is incredibly complex and multifaceted. There's some incredible facts around it. 1 in 4 people struggle with anxiety. That's about 65 million Americans. It does not correlate to race or geography or socioeconomic class, meaning rich and poor are affected by anxiety to the same degree. It does seem to be the most prevalent among women and children. Some of the recent research that I've read is that the average teenager today exhibits the same level of anxiety as a 1950s psychiatric ward patient. Fuller Seminary reported that 7 out of 10 teens are either dealing with anxiety or they're concerned about a classmate who's dealing with anxiety. Girls ages 13 to 17, 36% experience feeling tense, nervous, anxious every single day. It does tend to track in communities where there is kind of a pressure, a performance pressure, or a high-achieving kind of status. Gee, not like we would have any of that in Rockford, right? Tends to be kind of more prevalent there. Some are actually more predisposed to anxiety as well. But as I said, it's multifaceted. Anxiety is kind of this feeling of impending doom, or feeling as though you're trapped, or you're strangled under the weight of something that won't go away, something large. There's kind of an umbrella that kind of fits in the category of anxiety. Anxiety comes in many forms, such things as obsessive compulsive disorder, panic attacks, PTSD, and then kind of the general area of what they call generalized anxiety disorder. Some people just have kind of a general anxiety. And as your pastor, I'm deeply concerned about this because I see in so many ways this rob people of this best life, this abundant life that Jesus offers. And as burdened as I am, I'm also incredibly sensitive to know that many of you, based on these statistics, are probably facing these fears right now. I'm not only sensitive to it, I'm sensitized to the fact that I know that some people can get up on a stage and because of their position, because of their influence, because of their really awesome beard, right? They can kind of come across in a way as, well, you know, just do this. And I don't at all want that to be the feeling this morning. I don't intend to give you some sort of life hack or easy cliches on how to deal with anxiety. I want to give you instead, I want to give you truth to lean into this morning. And specifically, what does Jesus say about the topic of anxiety? Have you ever wondered that? What does Jesus say? And when people come to Jesus who are dealing with anxious, nervous, fearful moments, how does Jesus handle them with care? In fact, that moment did occur, and it occurred at this place in John chapter 14, because Jesus is now facing the moment where the crowds would turn on him, and his disciples would completely desert him, and he would be arrested and unfairly tried, and then he would be beaten and hung on a cross. And make no doubt about it, the Romans were very good at inflicting maximum pain. I mean, excruciating pain from the cross. It was a one-way ticket to death. And these disciples had followed Jesus. Jesus had become their friend, their teacher, their guide through life, their hope in this life. And they were nervous and scared for what would happen to them. But they also knew that if the Romans would do this to Jesus, then nothing would stop the Romans from crucifying every single one of his followers. They're anxious. They're built up with this fear. And Jesus says these words to him. It's just one verse this morning that I want to focus on. In John chapter 14, he says these words, the red letters of Jesus. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid. Isn't that odd? I mean, isn't that kind of a strange response from Jesus? I mean, imagine the scene, right? And it's almost as if Jesus is having this conversation with them. Oh, you're anxious, you're scared, you're nervous, you can't sleep at night. Well, take a melatonin, right? Jesus doesn't say that. In fact, I think Jesus in this moment isn't making any effort to try or attempt to try to fix their anxiety. And that lets us in on this clue about what Jesus really offers to us. And what he says instead is he gives them something else. He says, peace. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. And this idea of peace is, I think, often misunderstood and lost in our day. In fact, if you think about this as the remedy for anxiety, you know, if anxiety is this unknowable and uncontrollable effect that you have on your life, then you need something that is also beyond you and above you and not manufactured by you in order to combat it. And all throughout the Bible, we read that peace is this feeling that transcends all of our understanding. Peace, by the way, that Jesus is giving this is not just simply a Hallmark card. I think we sometimes romanticize the word peace, especially this time of year, peace on earth, and it'll be on Christmas cards, and it'll be on artwork, on decorations that maybe you'll put in your home. But the peace that Jesus offers here is what they call shalom. And shalom is different than just, like a word or an idea. Shalom, as the rabbis would say, is this promise of God's presence. And his presence, the rabbis would say, is like this blanket that covers over you. Like this security blanket that's always with you. See, instead of having a God that says, I'm going to fix you, Jesus says, I'm going to be the presence, the stable presence in your life that covers you in any moment of anxiety. And he says he gives you this peace, and it's different, right? He says, it's not the way the world works. I give you this peace. Do not let your heart be troubled. I don't give to you in the way that the world gives. It's kind of interesting. When Jesus contrasts peace, he contrasts it with not anxiety, but the world. And if you think about it, it's really the world that produces, it's kind of the machine that produces a lot of the anxiety that builds up, that heightens in our life. In fact, if you think about the world, certainly there's tons of benefits, but when it comes to anxiety, what the world gives us is really these three things. The world gives us, first of all, kind of this immediacy of threat and catastrophe. You know, you're only like one alert away on your phone from like ruining your day, right? There's this constant feel. In fact, Kara Powell writes that because we get these constant alerts on our phones, we're told, we're programmed, we're told when to be worried. It was kind of interesting this week and very sad that there was another shooting in California, just outside of Los Angeles, Santa Clarita. Deadly shooting, and it just broke my heart as I saw that news come up on the TV, and I was gripped by it. I couldn't pull my head away from it, and even though that was happening about as far away from Rockford, Michigan, as you can possibly get still in the United States, I couldn't help but project, I mean, what if that happened here? What if that happened in our community? And it's all because of that immediacy, right? Like, you're immediately told your life is being threatened. Your life is doomed because of this. I mean, you hear about a psychopath on the loose, and it's not even in your neighborhood, but you just begin to think, like, what if my neighbor's a psychopath? What if, you know, something happens here in my community? Or you hear about a natural disaster, and it's literally halfway around the world, and all of a sudden that alert comes up, and you're just heightened in your anxiety. That's what the world gives. The other thing that the world gives us is it gives us this way to kind of work through anxiety, and what the world tells you is Just do it. You just be you. It gives us this hyper-individualism. As the kids say, you know, you do you, right? And we see that hyper-individualism, when taken kind of to the full end, the full extreme, what it does is when you only focus on you, as the world tells us, is it leaves no time in life, no time to have empathy and care and concern for the people around you because you're so focused on you and your issues. And the other thing the world gives us is this unprecedented isolation. I mean, it's a strange world we live in. I mean, we've never been more connected. I mean, not just even here locally, but globally all around the world. And yet at the same time, there have never been more reports of people feeling isolated and alone. We've never been more connected and more alone at the same time. It's really interesting when you start to read this and you read it through the lens of wellness and especially the idea of digital wellness, like how our lives interact with all of the digital media that comes at us. You know, how do we live well with our screens and our computers and the constant pull that they have? A really interesting book about social media written by Dr. Cal Newport. And he talks about how what we need to do is really practice some digital minimalism. In his book, he writes how there's a negative impact on online activity on our psychological well-being. He says this in his research. He says, many people I spoke to underscored social media's ability to manipulate their mood. The constant exposure to their friends' carefully curated portrayals of their lives generates feelings of inadequacy, especially during periods when they're already feeling low. Do you hear what he's saying there? If you think about it, this whole term of like social anxiety, getting kind of anxious around other people, Dr. Newport would say that that's a recently new phenomenon. And the reason that we have that is linked directly to social media. That our social anxiety is in many ways a byproduct of our social media, our fixation with being connected in this online world around us. So what do we do? Again, I'm here this morning. I'm not your therapist. I'm not an expert on this field, but I am your pastor, and I'm charged with the responsibility to help us all think about this from a theological standpoint. What does God want us to think? And maybe more pointedly for us, how do we leave here today with that peace? If Jesus offers to give us peace, how do we live our lives with more peace? I want to offer some strategies, some ways in which you can live with more peace. And again, I want to be highly sensitive to anyone here. And my prayer all this week is if you've struggled with anxiety and you've tried these things that maybe just this moment, maybe God would just allow your heart to just be a little bit more open to trying again. And so here's the first thing with how to live with a little bit more peace. I would say this. I would say you got to learn to preach. You got to learn to preach a little message to yourself when you're feeling anxious. There's this strange thing about how we all, every one of us, need to be encouraged. We need to be built up, and positive words go far further in someone's life than any level of negativity. But I don't know if you realize this, the people around you will probably never fill that cup of affirmation enough for you. I see this all the time when I do counseling, especially marriage counseling, and especially in premarital counseling, right? You got a young couple, and they're so idealistic when they're young, aren't they? And they just think that they'll always be able to fulfill each other's emotional needs. And we use these words like, you know, love language, and you got to build the person up with words of affirmation. And then you see that as kind of the trajectory of marriage goes on, the wise marriages actually learn that other person, that spouse, could never possibly meet all of those needs for affirmation and for being built up, because you were never designed for any one person to meet those needs except God alone. And I think kind of the quicker you come to understand that, the quicker you begin to see that those words really need to come from God. And it really comes down to then directing that conversation and that need in your own mind. There's always a conversation going on in your mind. Some of you right now, you're having a conversation in your mind as you're listening to me preach. You're thinking, how much longer is this guy going to go? And when he's done, am I going to go, you know, where am I going to go for lunch? And maybe if you have more pressing issues, like, I got to get out of here because I've got bills to pay and I've got kids to move around. And there's always that conversation going on in your head. And my plea with you this morning is, why not direct some of that conversation? Why not direct that towards this unfailing, never-ending truth of God? I mean, if the enemy is just set on destroying our lives and working in our mind and working in our thinking, then we need to center our minds and renew our minds in God's word, in Scripture. And so I want to offer you just three verses. You might want to write these down. And these would be great little verses to either memorize, or maybe you write them on a note card. Maybe you write on a note card and you place it somewhere in your house. You place it on your mirror in the morning that you'll see, or on your fridge, or maybe you keep it in your car. I actually had somebody take a sermon of mine from like 4 years ago, and they were so encouraged by it, they actually took the verse, the main verse, and they wrote it on a card, and they carried it around with them for like 4 years. And then they thought I needed to hear those words, so they mailed it to me. I got a package in the mail of this verse and this message I had given. I was so grateful for it. So here's some verses that you can preach to yourself. Nahum 1, verse 7. The Lord is good. I want to read it like I'm feeling it this morning. The Lord is good, a refuge in times of trouble. He cares for those who trust in him. Maybe you go through the week, and maybe you don't get it even as far as Monday. And you need to be reminded that despite the challenges of raising young kids, or despite trying to make ends meet at work, that the Lord is still good. God is always available to be good to you. He's a refuge in times of trouble. And maybe you've got to preach that message once, twice, all throughout the day, so that you can kind of just hold on to that hope and direct that conversation in your mind. Another verse, great verse about anxiety, is 1 Peter 5, verse 7, where the writer here, Peter, says, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Another verse about God's care for you. But what I love about this verse so much is if you fish, you know that fishing is a whole process of casting and reeling, and casting and reeling. And hopefully some of that you're catching a fish, but you're still casting and you're reeling. And I think when it comes to this idea of anxiety, we have to remember to continue to do that, to keep casting. It's not just a one-time thing where I turned it over to God, like in 1987. I turned over that fear, like in 1982, and you just think, well, I'm done with it. No, Peter says, cast again and again and again. And you just kind of preach that little message to yourself as many times as you have to. Probably the last verse, the last message to preach would be kind of the go-to on anxiety. This is Philippians 4, verse 6. This is where Paul talks about anxiety. And he's talking to church people. He's not talking to Greeks and Stoics. He's talking to people in his church. And if you want to know what Paul thinks about anxiety, how to deal with anxiety, read the first line. He says, do not be anxious about anything. Now, again, some people can quote that, right? And it can be really unhelpful, like, hey, I'm anxious. Well, Bible says, don't be anxious about anything. Paul doesn't stop there. In fact, it just becomes a launching point into how to replace the anxiety in your life. He says, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. You know, maybe part of your dealing with anxiety is to kind of get the focus off of your fear and worry and nervousness, and to start to think, you know, what can I pray about? What can I, you know, make in a conversation to God? Or what can I petition God? God, I need help in this. Or even just what can you thank God for? So many things to be thankful for. Just, again, preach this message over and over. A second way in which you can have more peace in your life is the reason that this luggage has been up here this whole message. And I kind of have this phrase of travel light and travel together. I love to travel. In fact, as I get older, I'm looking forward to my kids eventually moving out of the house. And Sean and I are hoping they will move out, and then we'll go travel to where they are, and that'd be a lot of fun for us when they move out of the house. Did I say that already? But we got to travel a little bit this last summer, and I just wanted to show this. Like, when Sean and I travel, you can just kind of guess. One of these is her bag, and one of these is my bag. You can kind of guess which one is which. And you know, when you go away and you travel for your 25th wedding anniversary, here's just kind of a pro tip for husbands out there. What you don't say to your wife as she packs a bag like this is, you don't say to her, really? You need all those shoes? Like, you just don't say that. It just doesn't help the trip at all. But I do think this is a good reminder of how we travel through life. You'll get to choose which bag you want to take with you. And I much prefer this type of a bag. Because if anxiety is sort of filling up this luggage, then what we're really doing is we're carrying tomorrow's problems in today's strength. And I can tell you that if you carry all of tomorrow's problems and all of next week's problems, and you just load them up, you will get very tired. And the worst part about it is you won't empty tomorrow of its problems. You will empty today of its strength. And so travel light. And also travel together. You know, there are some of you, this entire message, you've been listening to it, and you've been saying, you know, I'm not an anxious person. I don't deal with anxiety. And there are some that are just blessed with that. In fact, a great writer, great Christian writer on leadership, Edwin Friedman, talks about how, as a Christian leader, to look for people who have this non-anxious presence. There's some of you in this room, you're just, you know, cool as ice, man. I mean, just nothing rocks your boat, and you're able to kind of get through the most anxious of moments without any difficulty in any worry. And you are a blessing to the body of Christ. And you are so needed in the church. And in fact, Paul talks about the role that you play if you're a non-anxious presence to others. Because what you can do is you can begin to say, hey, you know what? You were never intended to carry around all of that stuff, all of that weight. In fact, let me help you with that. Let me help you unpack that in your life. In fact, Paul writes in Galatians 2, he says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. There's some of you that you're such a blessing, and I want to encourage you to continue to do that, to look for the people around you that are way down, and just say, hey, man, it looks like that's really bothering you. It looks like something's really gotten kind of a weight on you, and you just help them unpack it in their life. You know, that does require that as a church that those who are struggling are actually vulnerable and share what their struggles are. Kind of some interesting breakthroughs right now in neuroscience. They've been mapping the brain activity, and they can figure out in the brain where our brain begins to light up and get really redlined when we're anxious. And they found that in times when people are really redlined and anxious, if that person just simply tells someone else, hey, I'm dealing with this. I got a meeting with my boss, or I got an appointment with my doctor, wants to do a consult. If you just verbalize what you're anxious about, that those centers in your brain will go from red hot, will come down to this cool blue, this calming effect. Your brain will actually begin to believe that you're working through this, that there's hope in this problem. And that's what we can all do for one another. Jesus is the only non-anxious presence, but we are his hands and his feet. Last way in which how we can live with more peace is this idea of staying tethered to him. Probably the best example and story I read in all my studies of health and mental health is someone describing anxiety as feeling like they're in this boat and they're just adrift at sea. And that may be you this morning. You may feel like you're in the middle of nowhere, that your life is kind of this shipwreck. It's in the middle of anywhere it could be. And not only that, but people with anxiety will say that not only do they feel like they're adrift, but they feel like whatever they were secured to, their dock has moved as well. Yeah, your spouse left, or your kids have moved out, and you feel like there's no hope. And here's my message to you this morning, that what if God is using your anxiety to tether you back to him? I know that sounds crazy, but what if? I mean, if Jesus comes to offer peace, what if peace is this lifeline, this rescue to save you, to tether you back to him? I'll close with this. Many of you know, about 6 months ago, we got a dog. And this dog was kind of a gift from our children to Sean and I. It was our 25th wedding anniversary. I'd like to say it was a forced gift. I didn't ask for the dog, but in 6 months, we've all come to just absolutely love this dog. His name is Luca. And I have figured this dog out. I have completely figured him out. He has an anxiety disorder. That's his problem. Because he is incredibly nervous about being left alone. In fact, you cannot leave this dog alone. He is right by your side. He will either sit next to you or on your feet. You can't even brush your teeth without his little eyes just watching every move that you make. He fears being left alone. You put him in his cage when you have to go, and he just whines like he's being tortured. Cannot be left alone. In fact, if you leave him alone and you're not paying attention, he will do naughty things, like he will eat the trash, he will eat the side of the couch. I know, ferocious little cockapoo dog. But the weirdest thing happens when you take this dog outside. It's like something in his brain just gets completely flipped, and he doesn't want to stay by your side. He wants to run for the woods. he's seen that cat and the freedom that that cat has outside, and the dog just wants to chase after the cat. Wherever it goes, it wants to go, and it just literally pulls you around there. That's why in this picture, Luca is on a leash every single time we have to take him out. A couple weeks ago, it was really early in the morning. It was like 4:30, and I was taking Luca out, and I wasn't really paying much attention. I hadn't had any coffee yet, and he's just kind of sniffing around, and all of a sudden, I think he sees the cat in the woods, and he bolts. He pulls the leash right out of my hand. I drop my coffee, and now the dog is gone. It is just running through the woods in our yard, and there is no way I'm going to catch this dog. In fact, if my neighbors didn't think I had already lost my mind, if they had looked out the window that morning, they would have been entirely convinced. As I'm running around the yard in my pajamas and bunny slippers yelling, "Luca, come! Luca, come!" And he is not coming back. There is no way he's ever going to come back. And what saved this dog is his leash got caught on a branch. And it pinned him. And at the same time, a branch went right up into his collar and his neck and pinned him there. He's like pinned in both ways. And I finally got to him, and he was sort of like gagging and choking, and I rescued the dog. And here's where I tell you, sometimes it's not a bad thing to be tethered to the only one who can save you. It's not a bad thing to be tethered to the one that says, "I want to give you peace. I want to give you freedom," and to be tethered to that hope in Jesus Christ. I want to invite the worship team to come up and just give us a few moments here in this space to go to God. And my hope has been all week long that as you're here today in this place, that we really would do what only Jesus offers to us. And that is that we would leave here as changed and different people. That his peace would just rest on your heart, and no matter what you've worried about, no matter where you are, even if you've just been wild, you've been off the leash, I want to encourage you this morning that Jesus desires to tether you back to him in God's love. If you would bow your head and pray with me, please. Peace. God in heaven, you promise us something that is truly outside of ourselves, and that is your peace. God, I pray in this room and in this space, as all weekend long we've gathered together, that for those who are here and struggle at any level with anxiety, God, that your peace would just rest in a real sweet way in this room. That every heart would be covered by this presence, by this security blanket that you only give. God, I pray for those who are here that struggle, that they would feel that in a real tangible way, and that community and life would just flourish around them because of you. I pray too, God, that just in all ways in which we're trying to grow into this idea of community together, that you would use every single one in their gifts and in their weaknesses to draw us together as a beautiful and perfect expression of your church, God. God, we thank you in these moments for the ways in which you work, and they are so different from the ways in which we understand. But God, just with faith like a child, may we be tethered back to you and your love and your grace. We sing to you now, and we give you these words full of hope of what only you can do. In your name we pray.
This podcast is a service of Bridgeway Community Church in Rockford, Michigan. Visit bridgewaycommunity.org for more information and other messages.